You have until our provisions arrive, provisions which will help us break into your elegant home. If you don't deliver him by the aforementioned time, we'll release the beast on him and on you. We don't want to kill our own. Please just let us purge.
Why are you doing this to us?
Because you are home.
The second you get within 2 feet of me, I'm gonna snap your neck and crack your spine.
And I'll shoot you dead.
And his spine will be cracked.
And you'll be dead.
And his spine will be cracked.
He's bluffing. How do you know that?
Huh? He's FBI. He knows this stuff.
Yeah, Paul. I know that stuff.
Please just let us go. Look, you have everything ahead of you. You're still so young. Nothing's really happened yet. We could just say George's leg broke on the boat. Everyone will believe us, I promise you.
Please don't do this. Just... Why are you degrading yourself? It's as painful for me as it is for you.
You don't know anybody by the name of Iris?
I don't know nobody named Iris.
No? You got a gun?
Yeah.
Suck on this.
I am death. Vengeance is mine.
Winter is coming.
Hello, welcome once again to Dark Discussions, your place for the discussion of horror film, fiction, and all that's fantastic. I am one of your co-hosts, Philip, from the state of New Hampshire in the US of A, and with me in the state of Michigan.
This is Eric.
Eric, how's it going, sir?
I am well.
Excellent. And in the state of New York?
Hi, this is Mike.
Mike, how's it going?
I am fine, Phil. How are you?
Doing well. And in the state of Massachusetts?
Hey, everyone, this is Dave here.
Dave, how's it going?
Doing good.
Excellent. And we usually have another co-host, but Chrissy from Connecticut has this entire month pretty much wiped out, so she's not joining us tonight. But she will be back in March, so listen then. This is February 13th, 2020, and that's when we're recording. It's just turned 50th birthday of David Michael Farley, so congratulations to him, making the century mark, and he's still hoping that his choice wins the...
50 years isn't a century.
Half a century, isn't it?
Oh, I thought you said century.
Oh. No worries. He's still hoping to get his Patreon pick. He's been putting it in for months now, and hopefully it'll come up sooner or later. And that is...
May the odds be ever in your favor.
That's exactly right. Who are we? For those who are new to the podcast, we are a podcast that discusses basically horror, sci-fi, fantasy, thrillers, techno-thrillers, mysteries, grindhouse, arthouse, midnight movies, cult films, and whatnot. Basically trying to talk intelligently about a genre that deserves intelligence, critique, and review. And we do have a website, but before we give that information, we do have a Facebook group, which is Dark Discussions Podcast Facebook group, where you can join us and discuss various things, such as right now there's a lot of discussion on the Oscars, on the Harley Quinn film, on a few trailers that have come out, such as Antlers, which is a horror film coming out, and a few others. And then, of course, the email darkdiscussions@aol.com, where you can read us your email. We do have an email that we were going to read on next week's episode from Amy Rain, who has some stuff to discuss about things that we talked about in a prior episode. So we'll have that email read next week as we get it available. And before we do anything more, Eric, we do have a website. Is that correct?
We do, Phil. If listeners care to go to www.darkdiscussions.com, they will find a wonderful world filled with all their darkest desires. Well, not really, but they'll find some interesting things there. On the front page, on the right-hand side, you will find links to friends of the podcast. You can follow those. At the top of the page, you have links to an articles section that has articles written by myself as well as others. You use an audio section at the top that links to every single episode of the Dark Discussions podcast, as well as any of the spinoffs available to download for free. You're bound to find something that interests you there. And on the front page, right in the middle, there's a link to our Patreon account, Patreon allows you to contribute to support your online artists. You can go to that link, or you can go to patreon.com/darkdiscussions. And for every $5 a month that you care to contribute to help us offset the cost of producing this podcast, you will have the opportunity to submit a topic for us to possibly cover on the show. We take all the submissions from our patrons and draw them on a random basis quarterly. So if you care to find out more, follow the link on the front page of darkdiscussions.com.
All right, very good. Now, any news or anything anybody wanted to bring up before we get into our topic tonight? Anything?
Yes, but I don't remember what it is.
We can do it later.
Maybe you'll remember, and we can do it when we do our house cleaning at the end of the episode and before we give our final thoughts. All right, sounds good. So, tonight, what are we going to discuss tonight, Eric?
Tonight, we're talking a movie called Villain.
This is a hell of a predicament we found ourselves in.
I used to be a salesman. I could read people. Now, I'd like to take a stab at selling you. Judging by the broke-down car and the sorry state of my front door, I'd say both of you are on the lam.
Everybody get down!
Next up, Florida!
How'd I do?
That was amazing. I feel like I might be able to read people just like that. I'm gonna try right now. Your clothes look expensive, and this is a pretty house. But you know what I think the most telling thing about you is?
Come on, baby, there's nothing down here.
It's the little girl you got chained up in the basement.
We're taking her with us. All right, you're free. Come with us.
Ah!
Sooner or later, someone's gonna come looking for you, too.
But there's still time.
You're a bad boy!
Oh, baby. Oh, I thought I lost you.
Don't sit here and tell me you don't wish you never went down those stairs.
So are you guys gonna kill us, or,
That's right. Villains is technically a 2019 film. Pretty much came out at the beginning of 2020, though, so it was like one of those festival films. It's directed by Dan Burke and Robert Olson, who've done two fairly interesting films, if not well-known films. One was called Body, which was the first horror film that was released in 2015, and I remember watching it. It was pretty decent. And they also did Stakeland 2. So they did the sequel to Stakeland. The film stars only a handful of folk. It includes the following. Bill Skarsgård, Micah Monroe, Kyra Sedgwick, and Jeffrey Donovan, who are all fairly well-known actors, if not A-list, is definitely well-known independent stars or supporting roles in major films. Kyra Sedgwick is married to Kevin Bacon. Jeffrey Donovan had a really great role in Sicario, back the Emily Blunt film from a few years ago. Micah Monroe, of course, is known for It Follows. And Bill Skarsgård is Pennywise the Clown, and has a famous family of actors that he comes from. The film has received 84% approval rating on Rotten Tomatoes out of 57 reviews. So that includes this film has been reviewed by major publications, not just regular blogs, and yet no one has heard of it. It premiered at South by Southwest of last year. So that's pretty good that it was able to be accepted there. And I guess we can get into how we heard about this film and what we thought about it. So let's start with you, Eric.
I heard about this last week when Phil was looking at movies for us to possibly cover. I got all excited about Micah Monroe and picked this one for us to do this week. I'd never heard of it before then. Yeah, I didn't care for this movie personally. It's listed as comedy, drama, horror on IMDb. And I would say that's the right order. And I didn't care for the brand of comedy that this movie puts forth. At the beginning of the movie, it's so in your face and over the top that it really kind of just gave me a bloody nose, and I just couldn't get into it. So there are a lot of good names in this movie. Not for me.
All right. Very well. Mike.
I'm trying to remember. I heard about it back in the fall, and it was getting good reviews, and I remember seeing the trailer for it, and it was one of those things I was thinking about picking up on my year-end watch list, but, you know, there was so much to watch, and it wasn't free, so I kind of kept putting it off. And quite frankly, I saw that it was one of those reverse home invasion films, which we got a lot of a couple of years ago, and I kind of got tired of them. The novelty of it wore off, you know, the idea of the home invaders having the, you know, being more dangerous, the supposed victims, the residents of the home being more dangerous than the ones that are invading it. Anyway, so I watched it. I liked it. I did not love it. I don't know that this would have changed my year-end list. If it would, it would have changed it very little as a 2019 release, because it would have been near the bottom of my top 20 list, I think. It is a horror comedy, but the comedy is more amusement than funny, ha-ha, laugh out loud, or and this horror, it's really, really low-key. There really isn't anything terribly horrific that happens in it. I think there were places it could have gone that they could have gone darker. I understand why they wouldn't, you know, to maybe get a larger audience. I know that this film was on the blacklist, which, if I remember, that's what it is the list they pass around every year of the top unmade screenplays floating around in Hollywood. And I just personally don't see it. What made it such a hot film? Because I think I won't say I did not like the film. I liked the film, but I just wish they'd kind of gone further than they did. Either had more fun with the comedy, or gone much darker with the horror. And they seem to have picked a middle line for both, and it just is a film that kind of left me, oh, that's nice. That's about where I was with the film.
All right, very well. Yeah, for me, I heard about it last week when we were trying to look for newer films that were VOD. A couple of films we went through. One was Ascent, and Eric said, no, you don't want to do that one. That's terrible. So.
That was the movie that's Ascent?
Yes. And for the record, although I didn't particularly enjoy this movie, it was the right choice.
Right. Yeah. So we went through like six or seven films, and this one was the one that seemed the most interesting, I felt, for the cast. Because those four actors are pretty good, and did get good reviews on Rotten Tomatoes with 57 reviews, which is pretty good for an independent film. Though it did have Skarsgård, who's kind of in the news recently for Pennywise. So we chose that. So I rented it that night, 99-cent rental. We can't go wrong for that price. And then I didn't watch it though until last night. It's a very odd film because, it felt more like a film to showcase actors rather than anything else. Because the four leads, get to really do some really good acting in the film, if from eccentricities to some comedic to some drama to some action and horror and whatnot. So that was one curious aspect of it, I felt. It also felt familiar because, as Mike mentioned, the reverse home invasion where the robbers are actually the ones that are in trouble rather than the homeowners. So that, like Mike said, it started a few years ago with it, Don't Breathe and whatnot. But it even reminded me kind of all the way back to House of a Thousand Corpses, because we're getting a homeowners that are a little odd, to the point of maybe psychopaths. So it was not original, and it was oddly made in the sense that it had multiple genres and didn't really stick with one, as Mike mentioned as well. But all in all, I kind of enjoyed the film. The ending was kind of a minor letdown, I felt, but generally, I mean, it kept my interest and I wasn't bored, but I didn't think it was blew me away by any means, but still a solid film, and 99 cents was not a problem. And it kind of fell in the same range as the director's prior films, where they're pretty good, but nothing that blew me away. Abe?
So I learned about this because we decided this was going to be the episode. I watched it actually this evening to keep it fresh, just because it's been a rough week with the cold and some work. I want to make sure I can remember everything, and it wasn't really a whole... Yeah, there's not a whole lot that's very new of this film. As Mike said, in the past we've had a lot of reverse home invasion movies. Don't Breathe, for example, was one I did like. But there was, after a while, they've done so many of them that there wasn't really anything that was very daring or anything that wasn't done before. And while I did get a giggle here and there, it wasn't exactly that great in terms of its comedy. And the horror elements are kind of, they don't go very far either. It doesn't have any gory or anything like that, but there's just not that it wasn't really anything that all that tense or daring there either. And the ending kind of felt like it was predictable and stuff like that. It was not a bad movie, it just didn't really stand out in terms of anything that I've seen before. Honestly, I think this is more in line that I'm probably going to forget about it before the end years out. I mean, the only things that really stand out is the cast itself, and they do well with what they have, but the writing is just not exactly that strong. It's not, as I said, it's not bad. It's just, I can't honestly say that I would make this a first recommendation in terms of a film. It was not only 99 cents to rent, so at least wasn't feel like my pocket got robbed, but yeah, it's not terrible, but I just could not see myself recommending this or watching it again.
All right, sounds good. That's for us opinion on Villains. And as Mike mentioned, yeah, it was a highly regarded script. Got some big play at the festival circuit. And yet, unless you were follow one of the cast members, you may have not have heard of the film, which is an interesting aspect about it. Well, I guess we can get into Erica Wiki.
Wiki.
All right. After a pair of amateur criminals break into a suburban home, they stumble upon a dark secret that two sadistic homeowners will do anything to keep from getting out.
All right, that's a crappy IMDb because it kind of tells you what's going to happen.
Pretty much.
Yeah. It doesn't really matter, though, because the whole thing's uninteresting.
You know, the whole step already reminds me, because I mentioned Don't Breathe, and it already felt like Don't Breathe because, you know, attempted robbery, someone being kept in the basement, trying to escape. Then again, that was also people on the stairs as well.
Yeah, there was. I was going to mention that. That is definitely a familiar vibe. If you've seen now, I know there's people who love People Under the Stairs. I am not a big fan, but it's other than the fact that this is set in a rural setting, and People Under the Stairs is an urban setting. The fact that the homeowners have this sort of throwback 50s vibe. It yeah. very much feels like it comes out of People Under the Stairs.
Right. Yeah. Actually, when I was watching it, the first 15 minutes of the film, you know, I originally assumed it was going to be present day. And then when they get into the house, the two robbers, you immediately see a desk phone that was, you know, from the 1970s. So I immediately thought it was a period piece. But then we find out that it's just the vibe of the owners that live there, and it's not a period piece film. But yeah, Mike, I also mentioned that I felt it kind of was like House of a Thousand Corpses too, in a sense. But I don't know if you felt that.
I didn't get that remotely because it wasn't a filthy, disgusting house of lunatics.
Yeah, I mean, because House of a Thousand Corpses really goes out there. I mean, that was when it was released, very daring. This movie is very subpar in terms of anything that was very menacing. I felt the villains were very subdued and kind of low key in terms of any real screen presence. Not the actors, but the characters.
Yeah, and you know, we got to say, like, when we talk about it's nothing new, we see more than your average movie watcher, right? This may be new to other people. And even other horror fans may not have seen, you know, 30 reversed home invasion films in the last 5 years. So part of that may just be a we thing, you know, the fact that we have been exposed to it. If this is not something you've seen before, like, I don't think it's bad. I think the performances are fine, but I think fine is just as far as I can go with it. Like, I wasn't blown away by any of the performances. I wasn't shocked by anything. You know, even People Under the Stairs, which came out over, fuck, I'm old, 30 years ago. I thought it was the way they handled the concept of the people in the basement, the people under the stairs, was more disturbing than just, oh, there's a girl locked up. Oh, should I spoil warning?
Yeah, no worries.
But I'm saying, but you know, so the ending had a shot to give me something I was unexpected, but they didn't really go there. There was the baby that I thought they could have done something disturbing with, but no, they went with something very pedestrian there. Even the wife, you know, it feels like, you know, Don't Breathe. Boy, they went somewhere with that concept, right?
Yeah,
they sure did.
Mm-hmm. And this just was quaint. It would have been interesting to sort of.
Yeah, you know what it was, Mike? It was more like they were cribbing the wife to be like Elizabeth Taylor's character from Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf, maybe. So just kind of crazy and has to have a fake child just
I thought Kyra Sedgwick was fine, her performance. But as Abe was saying, there's really not a lot of meat on the bone as far as this script goes. It's all kind of just it's just kind of bland.
Yeah,
there's none of the stuff that's in the movie goes to its full potential. The life of these two as criminals isn't very interesting. What's going on in the house isn't particularly interesting. The backstory of the mother is just kind of weird, and the husband, who knows. But like, I think if they'd focused in on like maybe one of those and just taken it to the next level, then they may have had something noteworthy, but they didn't. So the whole thing's just kind of meh.
Right. I think of like there was a movie, was it called Intruders? That was a similar concept from a few years ago. There, I think it was very obvious the villains, the intruders, the home invaders were getting what they deserved. Don't Breathe, I think you could have
Intruders. Was that the one where the woman couldn't leave her house because she was scared to leave her house or something?
I don't know. And then Don't Breathe, where I think we had a good debate, whether, because these were people who had robbed a number of people before, right? They were we had a debate how much they got what they deserved or didn't deserve, given their situation. Here they don't hurt anybody. They're teching in a rubber unicorn mask, they're robbing convenience stores, and yes, it's bad.
Yeah, but
do they really deserve anything truly horrible? Like the guy says in the film, when there's a chance of them being picked up by the police, you'll have to pay for your crimes, but it'll be a couple of years in prison, right? It's not harmless. Good stuff.
Yeah, but
and it's more than harmless, but it's also not, they're not punking people, but it's really penny ante bullshit. If they're robbing for a few hundred dollars, probably.
Well, yeah, I mean, and the thing is too that they are not, they do rob people, but they don't really hurt anybody. Like when they made the cashier faint, they actually worried about the guy and stuff like that. They're very low key compared to the protagonists of Don't Breathe, for example, who they vandalize and destroy things. Even though that, yes, one member is more of the asshole, but they go a little further in terms of their criminal acts. And this is more like, look how wacky these guys, these two are. They have all the little quirks and everything like that. We're already putting them in a much more sympathetic light than the usual characters usually are for these kind of reverses.
Right, and because they're endearing, in a way, you kind of dismiss, and you don't see them deliberately harm people. And it's clearly, they're clearly out of their depth just when it comes to robbing a convenience store. You don't really wish harm on them, and really not much harmful, terrible happens to them. If something really gross and disturbing happened to them, if, they ended up in Human Centipede 4, that's a whole...
Yeah,
that's a different thing. Until the end of the film, all right. If they had gotten away 5 minutes before the end of the film, was there really a lot of trauma that they suffered? So they didn't get disturbing there. I'll go back again. I didn't feel like they were trying to say anything with the film. People Under the Stairs, again, I didn't like it, but a lot of people loved it. It was definitely saying a thing. You can't have this throwback 50s killer in the late 80s with the man of the house clearly based on Ronald Reagan. They were clearly making comments about the state of politics at the time. Here, it felt like they just did the 50s throwback thing because they thought it would be quirky and a little, what do you call a little bit of a juxtaposition of these bad people with the sort of 50s mannered stuff, but really, using the middle class America values, white picket fence thing is something that's disturbing, was novel when Tim Burton was started doing it 30 years ago. And it's really kind of cliche now. So even that I wasn't finding a thing. Even when you get right down to it, we don't even know. Like there's a scene early on, right, when they first break into the house, and they're rummaging through their things, and they throw a camera on the bed, and you see them torturing a couple.
Yeah.
Right.
You don't see anything that really, in this film, that really plays out to show that this is a couple of people that regularly do terrible things to people. You know, by the end of the story, we're kind of given this almost, he wanted to give his wife a daughter, a child, but she couldn't have a child, or he couldn't give her a child, whichever it was, because I don't know, they're completely clear on that. And so they basically kidnapped this kid and take him as their own. So we assume maybe he stole from this couple, but then, you know, even then that doesn't ever really go anywhere. It never comes up again. We don't get the, it'd be one thing if we learned like there's a whole pile of dead kids' bodies that they just keep stealing kids and trying, you know, and adopt them over and over again. I mean, there's ways you can take this that could have made it creepier or more disturbing, and they really went with the least shocking version of this that they possibly could. It was like the feel-good horror film, and it's just weird.
Aside from one character getting killed at the ending couldn't be any more happier than, you know, in comparison to the other films. Like, it just wasn't going far enough, and it didn't really try anything different. It didn't try to really expand on anything, or try to expand too many things, and leave things very bit bare or just undercooked. It's just a lot of ideas put together, but it just comes out as a plain piece of bread at the end.
Yeah, no, and that's a fair point. I mean, it's like you said, Mike. It's like, okay, so these are creepy people, and they have this kid in the basement, and they explain why they have this kid in the basement. But there's nothing that makes us think that more robbers have come in here and been murdered or tortured by these people, and it's just bad luck that they happen to break into this house and these people are there. And you know, I mean, are they technically any more scary than, I guess they are technically more scary than the typical homeowner that, like, for example, if a robber breaks into a home and the homeowner comes down the stairs with a shotgun and blows your brains out, that's obviously not good, but at least you know you're not going to be captured or chained up or whatever. But again, besides the weird side story of them possibly taking out a family to kidnap a girl so they could pretend the girl is their own, they're, after that, they generally don't seem like they're the type of family that would be a danger to society. So, you know, if you knock on their door and they'd probably say, oh, no, thank you, we're not interested. Or, you know, if you saw them at the grocery store, you wouldn't have to worry about them doing anything. So it's just coincidental that they have a secret and then these two robbers break in and they don't want that secret to go out. But it's not like they're a serial killer family, except for that one implication from the camera. And I completely even forgot about that camera scene until you brought it up just a couple of minutes ago, Mike.
Well, and the husband keeps talking shit about, you know, knowing ways to hurt people, and he never makes good on what he's talking about, right? He never backs it up.
Sure.
You know, we never see him really do anything. So, like, when you take a look at Don't Breathe, okay, so we learn quickly, you know, that this guy that they're ripping off was a military vet, and, you know, he's a man who has skills. Now you get the idea, even though the guy's blind, he's dangerous.
Yeah, they play with sound and that sort of quiet place. Sort of novelty of trying to be quiet around the villain.
Right, but they also make it clear that you fucked with the wrong man, right? That they basically are redoing, doing. They basically have, you know, turns out they're fucking with John Rambo, right? And you just happen to be, in this case, on this from the point of view of the people who have made the mistake of pissing off John Rambo. So here, what is there? There's nothing about these people that makes me think I should be scared of them, other than they're a little quirky and odd. When we see that she's carrying around what looks to be a really fake baby, so it's not a surprise it ends up being a fake baby, but that's it. It's just a doll, and it has a story to it. But, you know, the story, yeah, all right, it makes you feel a little bad for losing the doll, but I thought maybe she was going to be carrying around a dead baby.
Sure.
You know, that would have been creepy.
Right. Or even some supernatural thing, right? Because when she talks to the baby, it looks like the baby's actually talking back in her mind, because she goes, "What's wrong?" And then she suddenly stares at the closet, and certain things like that appear to make it look like they can understand. Like when she talks to the girl down in the basement who doesn't speak, it's as if they can understand her. And so you figure, all right, so maybe there's something more going to go on, and they don't pay that off either.
Right. Even the girl, right? The girl in the basement. Okay, real life, she was probably traumatized. Maybe she isn't going to be all that chatty. But, I mean, these two don't really do anything to antagonize her or scare her. She reacts, like she bites the guy at one point. So it's hard to tell. Is there something wrong with her? Are we supposed to feel sympathetic for her? And so at the end, when, you know, and obviously there is an issue going on here. So why is she chained up in the basement? And when we get the story for that, it's just kind of like, okay. It doesn't really justify her odd behavior within the context of the film.
So Mike, do you think the script was, and when, you know, it was on that blacklist, meaning, you know, one of the most popular scripts that have not been made into a film yet, and everybody was trying to buy it up. Do you think it may have looked different on the paper, where the whole film kept on bringing red herrings, like the girl in the basement, is she a monster or a cannibal or some psychopath or a Brightburn or whatever, and then the baby, you know, or maybe they are witches and they can, you know what I'm saying? Maybe the film was filled with all these things. That
she's a witch.
Exactly.
Well, yeah, a film could be written in a way, like you could have a script written in a way where it's just the writing of it is punchy, and the scene descriptions and character descriptions can be done in a way that's lively and entertaining, but it's all stuff that you would never see as an audience member. It may be, now I believe the writer also directed this, so I can't imagine there were huge changes, right?
Right.
But maybe it was. Maybe he had to soften it up to get some funding. I really have no idea. I don't know what his vision was for this. It just feels like an almost family friendly horror movie, and it's without quite entirely being that way. And you just like the characters so much, and nothing really so awful happens to them that you go, "Oh my God, that's horrible." Until, you know, the very end when, you know, the movie's over. But but even then I didn't like cry for the guy when he dies.
Right. Yeah, no. And yeah, that's a fair point. I was, when I look back at the film, I think similar to how in Dead Center, a film that we reviewed earlier, where the first like 30 minutes, you don't know exactly what's going on necessarily. And so when I was watching that film, I was texting Eric, I go, "Is it the Greys? Is it demons? Is it, is it witches bringing
just,
back
from..." Just sit back and watch the film.
Right. And this one here, they had a lot of those little things popping up, but they were all red herrings. They never amounted to anything. So what? Yeah, exactly. Why did the little girl in the basement, in the context of the film, not say anything? And then when the mother and father spoke to her, she didn't speak back, but as if they could read her mind and were communicating back and forth with her. and then the baby upstairs, and she's hugging the doll, and then she talks to it, and you think she's just crazy, but then she looks over as if she knows she's being watched, as if the baby had said something. And so all these little things that just popped in that made me think that, okay, they're going to go a certain way, and then it's really just quirky people that live in the house that had a girl in the basement, and that's it.
My biggest disappointment of the whole film is that there was nothing interesting about the girl in the basement. She was just a girl in the basement.
She was pretty much the MacGuffin of it. She was the main reason to keep the characters there from just trying to run out.
She was Newt without the personality.
Yeah.
Right.
She kind of did look like
Newt. I thought of Newt too.
Well, but even Newt started speaking a little bit by the end of the film. Affirmative. They mostly come at night, mostly. You know, they give you little bits of a personality.
Yeah, well, they also had moments of bonding, too. There was, you know, some kind of connection there that would help explain why the characters went so far to save her. You know, like, you know, we understood why Ripley, went so far to try to protect Newt, you know, go right into the deep bowels of the alien hive, even face the queen to save Newt. In this case, we don't really get that connection between the robbers and the little girl. We just kind of had it assumed because, yes, we got a little girl, we got to save her, but the emotional investment in anything like that is kind of lost.
No, that's true. That's true. Now, let me ask you this. Did you hate the two homeowners? Did you have enough empathy for the criminals before they broke in? And when they did break in, were you worried about their safety, or were you cheering on the owners? And also, did you even fear the owners, or did you like the owners? I mean, I'm asking a lot of questions, but I mean, that kind of will determine how you get into the film, right? Yeah, I mean,
yeah, well, for me, the villains they did, of course, the old 1950s proper, overly polite kind of shenanigans, personality quirks and stuff like that. But they never had aura of unease they brought with them. They never made me feel like kind of tightening on my seat, making me nervous that they're going to suddenly snap and do something weird or strange, you know. They never gave me the kind of unpredictable creepiness that the psychopaths from A House of Thousand Corpses had, or even the villains and people on the stairs who were just very just trigger, mentally triggering, and you know that there are triggers in their heads that they just would snap at one moment and just go off the rails, things like that weren't really there. So they never really made me weren't menacing, and in terms of humor, they weren't really all that funny either. So they were just kind of there, you know. It was like, okay, we got our antagonist, but they don't really do a whole lot that was very unique or interesting or makes them stand out amongst all the antagonists. And for, you know, I did kind of like the two main characters, but I wasn't really so absolutely worried for them because the menace of the villains wasn't really there.
Sure. Yeah, and I kind of agree. I mean, obviously, you're not supposed to necessarily like the villains because they have someone tied down in the basement. But again, I was expecting so many things to happen that I wasn't sure how villainous they were, because again, you know, since the girl didn't speak downstairs and whatnot, her first appearance made us see her in a scary light, because you know they have a scene where the lead actress gets up from this little bicycle that she's riding in the basement, and when she moves away, we suddenly see this girl in the shadows with eyes that are glowing, which obviously are just, you know, the when you take a flash, you know, you take a picture of, you know, and you see the glowing red eyes, but that's it. But again, they present it to scare us, but that presentation made me think that there's something wrong with the girl the entire time of the film, and that if they free her, that's going to be a very bad thing. And that the people upstairs that had her chained up were, okay, they're quirky, but maybe they're not bad in the sense that, you know, you would think of a psychopath would be, but they were protecting themselves and maybe who knows what else from some dangerous creature in the basement. And so the whole time I just kept on waiting for things like that. And I was also confused, like maybe they're not as bad as I think they are, even though they do have that weird scene where Kyra Sedgwick is talking to Skarsgård's character tied up on the bed and whatnot. So obviously they're definitely not right, but they definitely don't want to call the cops either because they have this quote unquote creature, at least in my eyes at that point in the film, in the basement. Was I wrong to assume that the child was
no, I was hoping for that reveal too, and I never got it.
That could have been actually interesting, the idea that the quirky host owners were actually trying to keep the evil thing locked away. That would have been a nice, cool little reversal. That would have been interesting. But no, they played it straight, unfortunately.
Yeah, I was expecting, like, at the end of the film, you know, when the girl has the gun, I was kind of expecting her to turn on Mika Monroe or something, do something weird or unexpected or shocking. Although at that point, I don't know that it would have, because it would have just been, well, that they did something. I think, yeah, it's weird because they the villains of the film are kind of sympathetic in a way. We don't, you know, they kind of point off on each other. Whose fault is it the kid's in the basement? or what's going on with that? Certainly the wife early in the film, like when she tries to, when she basically seduces or Bill Skarsgård, you kind of feel sad for her. I think they could have done it in a way where you could have done that in a way that made it far more disturbing and creepy. And they just went in a way that's, oh, and let's look at our family photos. It's like, oh, I know that's not always a pleasant experience, but it's really not horrific enough for what I'm going to see in a horror movie. And I think part of the issue is the name of the film is Villains. Nobody in this film sees themselves as a villain. You know, it's not really referring to the main characters. And as villains go, the real villains aren't really great villains.
No.
They're decent performances. They're doing what they're asked to do. I don't blame the actors. They do a great job portraying the characters they're asked to portray. But they're just not that villainous. And look, I know it's me, so maybe I'm underrating the villainy of keeping a small child locked up in the basement. Yeah, but sometimes they ask for it. You know, but we don't get the sense that they're doing anything terrible to her, other than like keeping her locked up in the basement. She doesn't seem to be in a hurry to leave. You know, that's another part of it. She doesn't come across to me as scared of them, does she?
No.
No, her performance is very subdued. I know she's supposed to have like Stockholm syndrome or maybe something like that, but she doesn't really emote a whole lot at all. And I kind of wish maybe the character and the actress did, just to kind of give us a little more sense of that, maybe some fear or some you know, lingering scars and stuff like that. Just something because she was just there, and it was really boring.
And even if they had just, like, if they had just called, like, the main character's villains, right? They don't see themselves as villains. They don't portray themselves as villains. Like, if they had done it in a way that there's supposed to be some irony to it, that here you have these kind of losers who think of themselves as Bonnie and Clyde, but really they're just kind of sad bank robbers. And so then the title villains was kind of ironic. Then I could kind of see it, but I don't even understand how you write the script and think, no, it'd be a great name for this film. Villains. They aren't even close to the best villains I've seen in the last 3 months, let alone last year, or worthy of a film called Villain. I mean, it's villains. It's kind of like Wreck 4, Apocalypse, which had no apocalypse in it.
Yeah, that's a fair point. Yeah, that's actually a great analogy, actually, Mike.
So, yeah. You know, and so when we talk about that, yeah, your new Give Me a Movie called Villains, you're kind of setting me up expecting some. I want a villain. I really want a villain. And I get it. Yeah. People, and I get somebody could write in and say, what do you mean? They keep a child locked up in the basement, and they shoot the guy in the leg, and they threaten to kill them. And yeah, but, you know, for a film that's billing itself as a horror film or a horror comedy, let's go through what we usually see in the form of a villain. These are very minor league villains. They're not even sick and depraved enough, you know, in the things they do. And you know, it's...
No, and that's a fair point, Mike, because, for example, you know, he shoots Skarsgård in the leg, and oddly, you know, that doesn't really play much into the rest of the film, even though he just got shot in the leg. But again, he's a home intruder, you know, and people will shoot home intruders. So it's like, that's all right. That's not really villainy, you know, so it's like, all right, you know, whatever. And then the girl in the basement. Sure, that's definitely villainy, but I was like Eric, thinking that they're going to some payoff where the girl in the basement's actually a monster or a creature that is down there and locked up because of that, not because because the wife doesn't want to see the child anymore.
Right, and that, even that's kind of weird, because what's the extent of the villainy? Well, the villainy is that they didn't want it, that he wouldn't kill the child.
Right, right.
Well, okay. That's true. And so, you know, from his point of view, it's a mercy, and we kind of understand it. All right, well, he didn't want to kill her. Maybe he's not as bad as we thought he was, because he's been telling us how terrible a badass is the entire film, even though we never really see it.
The thing we get to villainy is the videotape, the video recording, but it cuts out before anything really is seen, so the impact is gone.
Well, and it's also very ambiguous because, okay, you see someone with a knife, a kitchen knife, walking over to the kitchen, and there's someone at the kitchen, and then that's all you see. It's not. I don't think we actually really see. Was there any screaming or violence in the video?
Yeah, well, there was two people bound together and thrashing as the guys were.
Oh, you're right. Okay, yeah. Yeah, okay. Right, right.
But it cuts away before anything happens, so it's like, okay, you know.
Yeah, so that gives us an ominous tone to what's going to happen, but once we meet these people, none of that happens to them. It only happened.
Is there anything as ominous or is there anything that pays off as ominous or plays off as more ominous than what we see in the video?
No,
not really.
Right, and so if you're going to show
nothing in this movie is interesting.
All right, I mean, I don't know. Like I said, I don't know whether to go there. I thought it was a pleasant watch. The worst thing I think maybe in the film is the scene with the tongue ring.
Yeah, and that kind of plays the last two, though. You know, the girl cover her eyes and them bickering with each other.
And that's not necessarily a bad thing, because you can play stuff like that for laughs. Look at all the stuff that and it's unfair to hold any movie to this standard. Look at all the stuff like that Evil Dead played for laughs.
Oh yeah,
right.
No,
you know, you see it in Bugs Bunny cartoons and Three Stooges, that type of stuff.
Right, but did you laugh or did you just smile?
I cringed.
Cringed a little. Yeah, I mean, it's not. You know, it's even when it's trying, when it's funny, it's not funny. Oh, okay, that's cute. I'm really having a hard time. I feel bad because I feel like I'm missing something because it's got some really good reviews. And I don't know what movie they were watching that I didn't watch.
Right. Right. Well, and that's the thing. It's like, all right. Obviously, Eric, you know, he didn't have any enjoyment in it. But, you know, generally the rest of us, the three of us, thought it was, you know, acceptable. We thought it was all right. So,
well, and to be fair, Mike said, like, Mike seems way more upset about this movie than I am, even though I say the words that I didn't like it more than he does. He's been going on about 20 minutes now about different problems with the movie. So, yeah. Did you like it, Mike? Because it doesn't seem like it.
Well, the thing is that I'm sitting here talking about the film. I have had a busy day. I have put zero thought into the film since watching it last night. And it was kind of meh, was my thought of the film. I watched it, went to sleep, and then, you know, had my day. And now that we're talking, I'm like picking through, you know, and so I'm kind of picking my thoughts out now that I haven't been doing. And it's, so I'm trying to figure out why didn't I have a bigger or better response to it, you know, and, you know, picking apart the elements in the film, what could they have done to make it a better film for me, which of course they aren't making the film just for me. I understand that. But that's why I'm kind of focusing on the negative. I don't want to just focus on the negative. It's kind of annoying me that I am just focusing on the negative, but I think that's where my brain is at the moment, is what was it that got us all kind of a meh reaction? And so I'm trying to dissect the film, in my head and try to figure out what wasn't clicking about it.
Yeah, and I don't know, Mike. It's a curious film. Like I said, I felt it was more of a showcase for the actors, just for the fact that the plot was pretty standard for this type of genre. There is no real villain as we would expect in a horror film. I mean, you know, I compared it to House of a Thousand Corpses and the Firefly Clan. I mean, that's really true villainy for a horror film. I didn't even see a villainy in this that would compare to a gangster film, for that matter, like a Scorsese gangster film.
Oh, no, so, no way. Yeah.
So that didn't work, play out. And then I felt there was many, many red herrings, and I don't even think they're called red herrings, but their ideas that they were presenting to make us think the film was going a certain way. Like I said, the monster in the basement.
Those would be red herrings, definitely. Yeah. And I'd forgotten about the look she gives to the closet.
Yeah,
that's a red herring. That's either a red herring or it's terrible direction. One of the two.
Right. You're right. Because I was thinking, okay, the thing in the blanket, the baby, actually has some sort of demon in it or something that can tell through psychic abilities, or maybe they're just witches that, you know, I felt all these things. It's like, oh my God, they're going to go that way. That's cool. And then they don't. And it's like, oh. And so that kind of, you know, it was disappointing. And then the standard ending, and standard in the sense that the whole thing was just two quirky characters that lived in this house that two robbers went into, and some bad things happened. But again, it was just a gun and a car, and that's it. And it's like, okay, so there was really no payoff, except that this is like Chrissy would be here, and she probably may have not liked the film either, but or just thought it was okay like we did, but
she might have loved it, who knows.
Yeah, or she might have loved it, but there could have been something there where the child and the lead crook woman, when they leave and they form a new life and whatever, I mean, was that, that just felt like tacked on that. I mean, because, I mean, what was the whole point of the first 80 minutes of the film?
Well, yeah. And that's the whole thing for me. Like, any path they could have taken to make this movie actually interesting, they did not take.
Nope.
And they ended up straight down the middle, uninteresting.
All right. Yeah, like one of the things I had. Okay, let me ask you. The character, Mika Monroe's character, Julia. Mm-hmm. She tells a story, right? So this whole serial thing, you know, and I guess that's supposed to tie into the family. Tells this story about how she, you know, has this thing with a toy mm-hmm. horse, and her sister Winnie, which is funny given that it's a story about a toy horse. And that their parents just stopped showing up. Their parents disappear mm-hmm. for a week. We never get a payoff to that story, right? We never find out, like, she turned out kind of okay. Were they abandoned? Was there an accident?
The backstories were kind of hosed, too, because that one, like you said, it doesn't really go anywhere. And then Kyra Sedgwick is just like, she gave me this baby doll and told me I'd always have it, and now you broke it. Okay.
Right, and quite frankly, and that's how you realize, right? And that's right. That's where we're not going to be forgiven and let go. You know, structurally, I think having that story before she broke the doll might have given us a little bit more of an oh fuck moment when she actually does break the doll. Mm-hmm. There's all sorts of ways they could have gone to make it more compelling, and I'm still stuck on how the fuck did this end up being on the blacklist, which makes me wonder how bad all the other films on the blacklist are. because again, this is I guess my point is if Pam, because this was on sale, so I actually bought it, even though I'll never watch it again. I don't mind because it was relatively cheap. If Pam says, "I want, you know, can we watch Villains?" I would be fine watching it again. Maybe I would pick something up watching again. I did not enjoy myself. This wasn't a terrible viewing experience. It just wasn't the most interesting. So where that's in that regard, that's where I am with this film. I didn't actively dislike watching it. But I also don't know that I have ever any reason to watch it again now that I own a digital copy of it.
Well, that's an interesting point that you brought up about the doll and it breaking. Because at that point when it breaks, I'm thinking, okay, so there goes the witches and the possessed doll and all that part of the story. And then when she starts explaining the backstory of the doll – and sure, okay, now they're not going to let them go because of what they did to the doll. It was supposed to make me start fearing for the lives of the two break-in people. But at that point, I was like, oh, no. So when she was talking to the doll, she knew the doll wasn't alive in the first place, and she was just talking to it because the doll was just a sentimental thing. And I felt that was a letdown to the whole plot as well, you know, similar to like someone talking to a plant or something. It wasn't like she was necessarily crazy to the point of like, the doll's alive and you killed it. It was like, you just broke my doll. And yet earlier she was pretending it was alive and it was like, oh.
Yeah, I think something else you just thought of. So when you're getting into the last act of a film, right, you should be, or a story, you should be doing everything you can to ratchet up the tension.
Yeah.
You know, so, and if you're smart, you lay things out like the doll breaking that help crank the tension up. Well, what happens near the end of the film is the cop comes. All right. We throw right. Your film, like your caper films, have you plotted everything and the show, precisely, and then there's the wrench in the works is thrown at the end and throws the whole plot off. Well, here we've got the scheme. We're told what is going to happen to them, and whoop, now the cop shows up. Well, what's the most interesting thing you could do with the cop now? What's the thing that will complicate the story further?
Killing the cop?
Is killing the cop. And that can start now making it, because now you have another, because now I'm not really sure who I'm supposed to be rooting for. That can start now throwing them into more of a panic. It can create more of a Jeopardy situation. But nope, they just have the cop come around. Why is the cop there? To distract them, to allow our nice romantic couple time to get away, right? Or to stage their escape. They have George, point the gun at the cop, which was just fucking stupid, standing at the top of the stairs, waving the gun at the cop. And then, like, tucking it behind his back when he turns around. Force him to shoot the cop and have to deal with that. Throw more complications in it to make the story more interesting, to raise the stakes a bit. And they didn't. I think, Eric, you nailed it. Every time they had a chance to do something interesting, they went the other way.
Yeah, and it's true. It's true. And I think, I remember me, you, and Barrett Heisner did Haunt a couple of weeks ago during Christmas break when me and you decided to do a couple of episodes while everybody else was enjoying the time with their families and friends. We discussed how Haunt was...
They were enjoying family and friends. We were doing a podcast.
Yeah, I know. I was thinking that too after I said it. But what it was is we just actually had a night to do something. So what happened with that film and that script, we discussed how, you know, it was written by the same guys that did Quiet Place, and then after Quiet Place's success, whether it was rewritten a bit or not, they became somewhat of a commodity, those writers. And so they somehow got this film made. Because they said, oh, well, you guys just did Quiet Place, you know, do you have something else? We can make this film. And you mentioned that Haunt, that film, the script for Haunt was a script that these two guys that did Quiet Place said was a spec script, or possibly a spec script. And so when someone came to them and asked, do you have another script, they pulled out this old spec script and, you know, reworked it and then made a movie, and that movie was actually pretty good and has gotten a lot of buzz. But looking at this film here, The Villains, which is, again, it's a really good actor's piece, but as a script and being popular on a blacklist and all this other stuff, I'm now looking at it, I'm going, if Haunt was considered a spec script, what the hell was this considered? Because this felt like a spec script, because... Again, unless all the red herrings that were in the film were more well done written than presented, this film, or the script that was the quote-unquote hot commodity, felt really, to me, based off of what was produced here, just to be a spec script that didn't deserve necessarily to be made. And not because it's a bad film, but because it's really just an actor's piece and not really a big plot of any originality.
And honestly, well, even as an actor's piece, I don't think it is even that strong enough to be a real standout either.
Jeffrey Donovan was pretty solid, but go on.
Yeah, I suppose.
Yeah, but I don't know that anybody here is necessarily going to be getting awards either. I think...
Well, when I say,
like I said, I think
you know, independent people that want to get a name and say, look, I did this film here, you know. But anyway, continue, Mike.
I think either the only three options was, one, I don't get it. There's something I'm missing, and you're missing, and Abe's missing, and Eric's missing about what makes this story so wonderful. I'm willing to concede that possibility. And I'm hoping right now there's a listener out there that we have that's going, you fucking idiots! What's wrong with you? It was the doll! Don't you understand the doll? Yeah, I don't know. I'm hoping that's that, and they're going to write in angry and complain about us and how we completely missed the point of the film. That's one possibility. The other possibility, as I said before, is just literally the way that it was written, and it's stuff that's in the script that can't appear on the screen, or the possibility that the screen that something about the film was altered, maybe because to get, you know, for budget purposes, or edited afterwards for test screenings, or to make it more marketable. I have no idea. Those are the only three things I can think of about why the script was a considered a hot commodity and yet ended up kind of being a little meh.
Right.
But I also think I've seen other Blacklist films, and a lot of times they do end up kind of being disappointing. You know, there may be a reason why these aren't necessarily what's the hottest script in Hollywood. These are the best films that nobody's picked up yet. You know, it's sort of like, who's the prettiest girl at the dance who hasn't gone home with a date yet? You know, maybe there's a reason why they're one of the ones left over, which is that they're not that great. They're good, but they happen to just, what's good about them is they're just competent as opposed to all the other dreck that bad screenwriters put out there. That might be another possibility that I'm not considering until just this moment.
Right. Yeah, no, and that's again, an acceptable thing to say. And it is, you know, I mean, that's the thing is, like, when we talk about these films, we figure out other things and stuff. I mean, I completely forgot about the camera to make it ominous. I mean, and you kind of knew that everything was going to go south when Jules said she didn't want it, she wouldn't leave until they saved the girl. And, you know, if you don't have a key, how the hell are you going to save a girl? And the more time you're in the house, the longer or the more apt it's going to have someone come home because you've been in the house too long. I don't know. And Eric, let me ask you this. You said you thought maybe there was the monster in the basement. Did you think it was going to go anywhere else? Any other payoffs as the film was going? I mean, obviously as you get to 20 minutes and 30 minutes and 40 minutes and 50 minutes and six, and you still haven't seen any major twist, or as Mike mentioned, you know, maybe they kill a cop at the 40-minute mark, and then the next half hour of the film is just all kinetic. But was there any other things that you thought that the film was going for? I mean, I assume you didn't believe that it was just going to end as it did, right?
Well, it didn't go anywhere interesting. That's the thing. I maybe the couple in the house was going to be crazier than they were, but no. You know, maybe there's something with a girl in the basement, but no. I just don't have anything to say about this movie.
I think I've said everything I want to as well. I mean, this movie's more boring to talk about than watching.
Right. Yeah, I mean,
it's a disappointment too, because with the talent involved, I mean, these are good actors in this movie. I'm not slamming on any of the people in this movie. They're good actors.
That's
not the problem. This story just doesn't go anywhere interesting. That's all.
Right. Mike, what about you? Did you think the tone shift was different? Because once they find the kid in the basement, I guess that's the beginning of when the tone shifts. Because prior to that, you know, they show her eating the cereal, it's stale, and she throws it over her head, and, you know, things like that to just get
The comedy in this movie didn't hit home with me either. That was actually my biggest problem with the movie. Is at the beginning, they're trying to they're really hitting hard on the comedy at the beginning of the movie, and I just didn't think it was funny. Like that whole scene in the gas station, I'm like, what is this?
Yeah, it's bad when, you know, it's one thing when you can't get a horror movie to be scary. It's another thing when you can't have a comedy to be funny. And I think that's even a more brutal failure on a film's part, because it's just like, it's painful seeing a comedy fall flat.
Right. Yeah. What about you, Mike? What did you think about the tonal shift?
I didn't find it that much of a tonal shift. I kind of, partly because I kind of knew it was coming, but it didn't suddenly get dark. You know, this wasn't, From Dusk Till Dawn kind of tonal shift. It was just two quirky characters meeting two other characters who are quirky in a bit of a different way. The thing they find in the basement is a kid in the basement, and it's presented as, huh, that's weird, more than, you know, oh my God, there was something truly more horrific when they find the kids like in the under the stairs and the people under the stairs than what you got here. You know, it's not like a Texas Chainsaw Massacre tonal shift, you know, where they pick up the hitchhiker and things just go south from there. I will say that one of the thing that just I thought it was a cute idea, but it annoyed the fuck out of me, was the car wash.
That was kind of cool, actually, I thought. But
it was a cute idea. I get it. But then the way they filmed it from their point of view, and they have this halo of hair that is an ungodly, terrible, and unconvincing wig. You know, so if they don't just have her, like, the actress looking over with her hair falling down. It is clearly, clearly Halloween store fake hair. And it just looks kind of dopey and cheesy. But kind of like if they had not shown it from their particular point of view, that's a whole nother matter. But that's not what they did.
Right. Yeah, because it was like their form of ASMR or, you know, a cracking the egg over your head type of thing. And then, right. I think, yeah, I mean, if Chrissy had seen it, she would be able to tell us that, oh, that was supposed to symbolize, you know, something, whatever. But then they even throw that as comedic, too, because when she says, I love you, and he just does the Harrison Ford or Han Solo, I know. Instead of, you know, I love you back, you know. And so it kind of even the comedy there, I didn't think even fit with the tone that they were trying to get. Because obviously when she starts doing it, you know, you kind of giggle and whatever. But then it starts, they try to make it look more sweet and angelical and love and all this other stuff. And then they pull the Han Solo line and it's like, yeah, all right. I guess it kind of was trying to be funny, but.
Well, which is just proof that sometimes it's the delivery of the line that's funny, not the line itself.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. Yeah, so I don't know. I forgot about that scene, too, until you guys brought that up again.
Right, I think the problem is, again, I think Eric disliked it the most. Is that there isn't anything good enough to really talk about, right? It's not visually striking. The performances are fine. They're not brilliant. There's no scenes that make me go, oh, my God, I'll never forget that scene.
Well, and the thing is, I probably did dislike it the most of us, but it's not like I'm not sitting here, like, seething with anger towards this movie like I did with something like, oh, say, Green Inferno. It didn't incite any like strong emotional reaction to me at all, and that was part of the problem. I just find it completely uninteresting.
It was just kind of bland for me too. It never made me angry like the gallows or anything like that. It just happened and it was done.
Yeah.
And I don't remember. I think that was Boar. Right, I think I mentioned that the movie Boar on Shudder,
yep.
An Australian movie about a killer boar, in case you were wondering.
Oh, I saw that before you.
You did. I was willing to give it a shot, but I said that, you know, there's just utter mediocrity is its own kind of suck, you know, and it was, you know, it was a film that I found totally uninteresting in any way, shape, or form, and... I won't go that far because I enjoyed this where I really was just bored out of my mind watching Boar. But in trying to find something...
No pun intended.
Well, yeah, that was a bit... Oh, you know that would... If anyone actually had bothered covering the movie, it would have had plenty of Boar puns. But yeah, I think that's... What is there really to talk about here? And the only thing for me to talk about, if you haven't picked it up, is why wasn't it more interesting? What could they have done to give us something to talk about? You know, what could they have done that would have thrown us into a direction that we were not expecting, that we hadn't seen before? And I think Eric nailed it. Every time you had a choice to go left, they went right. They found the least interesting spin on just about everything. You had the chance of Bill Skarsgård getting raped up in the bedroom, and they decide to have them look at old photos instead. They're playing kind of for like when she was doing her little seduction, right? That wasn't creepy. It was awkward.
Definitely awkward. I agree.
It was awkward. But it was like, oh God, you know. But there were ways you could have done that really would have made it creepier. Now maybe this is a limit of the director. What other films has he done, Phil?
He did Stakeland 2. Well, it's two directors, two guys together. They do Stakeland 2, which I heard was just mediocre. And then they did a film called Body, which came out like in 2015, but it actually, I think, was released in 2016, January. And it was about these four girls that go and someone dies and they have to cover it up or something. And then they start fighting after each other. And it was okay entertainment. The girls were easy on the eyes, but it was just an average film. So those are the only two films they've done that besides this one. So all three horror films, or whatever you want to call these genre films, I guess.
Right. But all three of them.
Yeah, were just okay, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
Yeah. So.
So,
yeah,
that,
so
then maybe it's the director.
The two directors, Dan Burke and Robert Olson. And there were other films. Body got 42%. Stakeland 2, I don't even know what that got. But they did screenwrite a film called Don't Kill It, and that got 92% in 2017. But I know Stakeland 2 wasn't well received by people on the horror podcast community. You know, on the pages, because when it came out, you know, people, that would, it was kind of exciting, and then it just kind of faded away pretty quick. Saying it doesn't have enough reviews to even have a score on Rotten Tomatoes, so it was kind of ignored. 33% audience review. Out of the four reviews, it did get three good and one bad. So, including Nerdist giving it a good review. Anything else anybody wanted to bring up? Was there any specific scenes or anything? Anyone?
Yeah, I just found there's someone, it's on scriptshadow.net that is reviewing from 2018 the screenplay for Villains. I am not obviously reading it because we're on the podcast, but I'll post a link to that if anyone's interesting.
Okay.
And just quickly scanning it, I guess they have, he has a ranking of the screenplays he reads, or she, which is, what the hell did I just read? Wasn't for me, worth the read, impressive, and genius. So of that five options, going from one through five, which one did you think he picked?
I would say, so repeat them once more.
Well, I guess the lowest score, what the hell did I just read?
Yeah.
Then number two, wasn't for me. Number three, yeah, worth the read. Number four, impressive. Number five, genius.
I'm guessing.
I would say worth the read, maybe.
Eric?
Yeah, worth a read is what I guess.
Right, so what is the least interesting option to pick? Worth the read. That's what he got.
Oh,
right.
Yeah, yeah. So even though this is a black script, or whatever you call it, blacklist script, meaning it one of the most highly reviewed scripts that hasn't been made into a film yet back in 2016 and whatnot. So he read the script in 2018, and he only gave it worth the read, which is basically mediocre average, you know, 3 out of 5 stars. I'm now curious to see what the hell else is on this list, because it's like, I mean,
well, there's a list. I did find a list. So things like Wolf of Wall Street were originally on that list. So there have been some big films that were on that list. So
sure,
but there's been a lot of hits, and there's been a lot of misses. So just having been on that list is not a guarantee.
Of either failure or success. In other words, it could be a super movie like Wolf of Wall Street, at least in my opinion. I know you weren't a big fan, Mike.
It was okay,
a bomb.
Right, and so this was on the 2016 blacklist. So this is going back a few years, and look how long it took them to get made. And I guess this was right after they had signed Skarsgård and Mika Monroe. So for the film, so that's why this ends up getting a review.
Right. Yeah, yeah. I mean, Skarsgård, even though I didn't think he was the best actor out of the group, his character was kind of annoying, to be honest, even though he probably was told to do what he did. That's probably the main reason why the film got some notoriety, I think, because he just did 2 Pennywises, right? I mean, this is his next film since the Pennywises.
Right. Yeah. And it's right. And it's weird. Now, this is 2018 is when he got signed. So he got signed to do this before it had broken. It would have been before it had broken big. It was right after it had broken big.
Right after, because 2017 was the first it, right?
Yeah, maybe. I was thinking it was 3 years ago, but we're barely in 2020. So, yes. So it's just weird that this is his first film. I don't know if maybe because he wasn't in makeup, right? Or because he was in makeup for it, maybe it's going to be harder to parlay that into a into putting in your name on a banner, right? It's because people aren't going to recognize your face.
Right.
Yeah.
They're going to, that was the guy who played Pennywise. Well, no, sure. They're not going to know that because he doesn't have a giant ass forehead with buck teeth and
orange red hair. And
Yeah.
Right. I mean, you could see the eyes and the mouth, that, but again, he did, like you said, he had a bunch of makeup on, so it's not something that he's going to be easily identified with it. But again, though, a lot of the critics knew, and obviously a lot of horror fans knew. And then I know there's a small cult following for Monroe, because I know like Jason Lloyd and a bunch of other people just see any film that she's in. And then Donovan has a pretty decent cult following too, if not huge. And then, of course, everybody knows Sedgwick from her, she was on that TV show for like 12 years or whatever. And so she's well known as a huge TV actress. So the cast is fairly recognizable, even to not just horror fans, but to others too. So this is the type of film that, if you like following your TV actresses, you would probably say, I want to see that film. That's Kyra Sedgwick in it. Or, the cult following people will definitely follow Monroe and Donovan. And then of course, any horror fan or a thriller fan or anybody who knows film in general that's a big fan of films will say, that Skarsgård guy is pretty good. I want to see this film. And I think that's maybe where it got the notice. But again, none of them were big enough stars that anybody's going to go out and see it. And of course, you have to wait until it comes on VOD. And Eric, I'm not sure how Apple does it, because I watched this on Apple, and I'm sure you did as well. It did make their top 40 horror films of the moment. But
what's that based on, though? Because if it's based on popularity on their service, yeah, it's a fucking 99-cent rental.
Yeah, that's a good point too. Yeah. So it has four recognizable names, or at least have some recognition, depending on if you follow certain actors. And then it's dropped as 99 cents. And then it did get 57 reviews on Rotten Tomatoes, which is pretty damn huge for an independent film that goes straight to VOD. So it's just interesting, the whole thing. I mean,
I disagree. I don't think it's interesting at all.
Fair enough. Anything else anybody want to bring up? Anything? All right, fair enough. I guess we can get into maybe things that we've been watching or whatever, video games, television shows, anything that's genre-related that folks that listen to this podcast may be curious about that they may want to see or we want to let them know about to avoid or whatever. Eric, you usually have a pretty good selection of things that you've seen. Has there anything that you wanted to bring up?
It's mostly rewatches this week for me. I rewatched Knives Out with director's commentary. If anybody's looking to pick that up, I don't know if it's out on disc yet. I'm sure when it is, it will have the same special features that I got on iTunes. But it's pretty packed if you like your added content. It's got two commentaries and a bunch of featurettes on there. I rewatched.
Who are the commentaries?
Parasite.
Eric.
Ryan Johnson, I believe, is on one. Yeah, the director, along with I think the lighting guy and one of the actors.
Okay.
The second one says it's a theater commentary. So I'm not entirely sure what that is. Maybe it's just the movie with a crowd reaction track. I haven't watched that one yet.
Gotcha.
So then I watched, I rewatched Parasite with Dan and Susie. So they got to see it before it won all the Oscars. Then I rewatched The Gray, because I like to watch that movie every year when it's cold outside, so I can fantasize about Liam Neeson talking me through my death.
That's such a great, great film. that was really one of the best films I've seen like five times at the theaters.
I liked it a lot too. Probably the only new watch I've seen that might interest people is I watched the Saska Sisters remake of Rabbit.
What was that?
I liked it. It was a little weird. There were some things I thought they did better than the original, and some things they did not do as well as the original. Ended up being kind of a wash when all was said and done. Some pretty cool effects in the movie. I'll give them that. The special effects in the movie were pretty cool. Like in the beginning of the movie, this is true to the original too, so this isn't a huge spoiler, but the main character gets into an accident and has their face mangled. And you didn't really see a whole lot of that in the original, whereas in the Saska Sisters, when they had some really nice appliance work where you see this woman like pretty much with the side of her face missing. It was pretty gruesome. So I would give that a lukewarm recommend now that it's available for digital rental. Not a must-see, but if it's interesting to you, check it out.
All right, very good. That stars Laura
Vandervoort.
Yeah, okay. Speaking of The Gray, we actually did an episode on The Gray, episode 44.
Wow, that was a while ago.
February 16th, 2012.
Jesus
eight
Christ.
Years ago.
Oh, my God.
It takes me 8 years ago from today.
Oh, my wow. God. Wow,
and you know what's sad? It's like I remember
it
that
feels like yesterday.
It just came out.
Yeah, it feels like we just did that last year. Wow,
My God!
And if you know, if someone asked us, you know, came up to me and says, "Hey, when did you do The Gray?" I know you don't know the episode number, but where in the range? I would have said probably like 250 or something.
No,
I
would have
guessed late 100. Yeah.
Oh, really?
I would have guessed about 100 because I know it would have been relative because I know it's been a while now for that film, but yeah, I didn't realize it was that long. Whew.
Yeah. I didn't know it was 8 years old. That's crazy. Yeah. Let's see. Anything else, Eric? Or was that about it?
No, I'm done. That's it for me.
Oh, let me ask you this. What did Dan and his wife think of Knives Out and Parasite?
Well, I didn't watch Knives Out with them, but they really, really enjoyed Parasite.
Nice. Very good. All right. Let's see. Mike, what about yourself? Any TV or movies or anything that you wanted to mention?
No movies. I do want to remind people, I mentioned in the last podcast, I don't know which was just a couple of days ago, but I did put my annual thoughts for the year up on unnatural-selections.com. If anyone is interested, that's there. I'll get that out of the way. But
wait,
as I said, the article.
Didn't you secure the domain without the dash?
I did, but I decided I wasn't using it enough to continue paying for it, and that ran out. So,
oh, okay,
I let it go. Mostly, I've been watching TV. I started watching Lock and Key, but only made it through the first episode. And the first episode was, it was okay, but it's very much something that's clearly built to be, you know, part of a story, so you got to get a couple of episodes into it to really dig in. So I'll wait and see what happens with episodes 2 and 3. I just haven't had a chance to catch those yet. My wife and I finally started watching, because we're way behind on our TV watching, and one of the things that I have to watch together with my wife is Supernatural, and we are so far behind. We're still in not the last season, but the previous season, because now they're in the last season. Season.
Wait, 15. Are you watching season 13?
14.
Oh, okay.
They're in 15, okay. Which is going to be the final,
yes.
Final yeah. Season. And so we're getting closely caught up on that. And it's fine. It is what Supernatural has settled into, which is not as terrible as season 7, but not quite as good as seasons like 4 and 5.
Right.
And if you've enjoyed, say, seasons 10, 11, and 12, and 13, you should enjoy season 14. You know, it's a lot of the same. Characters die and come back to life on a regular basis. I also watched one thing I did watch to completion was the second season of Star Trek Discovery, which I thought was an improvement on the first season, but it still got issues. There were a lot of behind the scenes problems.
Mike, a question before you continue on that. So you did get CBS All Access?
No, I got the DVDs.
Oh, okay. So that's the show that is on CBS All Access, but they also now have them on the older seasons on disc?
Yes. You know, after about a year, they come out on disc. Unlike
Netflix,
which tends to take like 2 or 3 years to come out on disc, and then they don't put any extras on it. If you're a fan, you know, it's worth checking out. There's a lot of stuff that are callbacks to the original series. The Enterprise itself figures heavily into the finale. But the main thing that I'm interested in is where they end it, because they basically work hard to undo all the things that they screwed up, I think, in the first season and just in the concept of the series, which this is not a Star Trek show, so I don't want to get into that. So I'm more interested in where they left it off than what actually was on screen for most part. But that's about all I've done. So
don't forget, Mike, we discuss all that's fantastic. So we can talk to Star Trek if you needed to.
Oh, no, we could. But that's not what this episode is. Oh, and I saw Birds of Prey, which was what the other episode was about. And if you want to listen to that. That will apparently be a Dark Discussions episode, despite my protestations that it should be a Cinema a la carte episode.
I understand. All right, very well. Hey, what about yourself? Any TV, movies, video games, or news that you wanted to give us?
Yeah, someone came in the mail for me, and it was the expanded edition of Frozen Hell, or Who Goes There, by John W. Campbell, Jr.,
The novella. You got it.
Yeah, it's the expanded edition. I guess they had found recovered pages that Campbell was working on that adds another 45 pages to the original story. Further descriptions and stuff like that.
Explain what happens to Childs.
There is no Childs.
No Childs.
I know.
Yeah.
That was the joke. Never mind.
Yeah, not everybody.
But I'm looking forward to giving it a read.
checking it out. So I never read the original story to begin with, so I want to check it out.
Okay.
Yeah,
I think I've read the original version of that, not the extended one.
Yeah, the original is pretty good, but what it was is the story behind this extended version was is that it was supposed to be released as a serial and you know, like Amazing Stories or, you know, one of those magazines from back in the day. And they felt it was too long, so they asked them to cut it, and that's why those 60 pages were cut, not because it was something that he wanted to cut personally. So it's okay, in my opinion, it's okay to re-add it and then release it as a different edition of the
director's cut. Exactly.
So that's kind of cool that it's available now. I have it on my save list on my Amazon cart.
It even came with a little cool little bookmark for the book.
Oh, really?
Yeah, with Frozen Hail of like a skull of tentacles coming out of it.
Oh, that's cool. And that came with the book?
Yeah.
Nice. Where did you buy it from? Through Amazon or something?
Yeah. I came across it. I was trying to find this expanded version. I just found it. It actually has some illustrations and stuff in here, too.
Oh, wow. That's cool. How many pages is it?
With everything included, it's 158 pages.
Did you get the hardcover or the softcover? Because I know the hardcover is like smaller than them.
I got the soft cover. I just grabbed the one that was available, and that's what they sent me.
Very good, very good. Yeah, so that'll be cool. You'll have to let us know your opinion on that when you read it. Maybe it'll be one of our book episodes. We could probably
do that.
I think
it'd be a good idea, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. What else, Abe? Anything other news or other information or books, movies, whatever?
Nothing that really stands out. Not really, no.
Yeah, all right, very well. For me, I just finished my rewatch of Game of Thrones. So I just finished that. So that was good. I'll probably
Move on with your life now?
No, in about 5 or 6 months from now, I'll probably rewatch it again. Yeah.
No, he's got to go back to watching The Office now.
Yeah. Well, no, now that I literally stopped, it's like, oh, what do I do now? And I said, well, it's maybe time to pick up some of my discs again that I haven't, that's in the pile like you have, Mike, and watch a couple of them. So that's what I'll probably do. So that's pretty much all I got. I haven't done anything else except for the Game of Thrones watch on my spare time. And that's it. All right, so with that, I guess we can get into some house cleaning. So, Eric, you actually do another podcast with your buddy Dan.
I do. It's a general interest podcast called the Askancity Podcast. That's spelled Askancity. We finally got there. Dan and I are not weekly anymore because we're both just too busy. But we just last week finally got our 400th episode released. So that's a milestone for us.
Yay!
Yeah, that is cool. Very good, very good. Yeah, so that's cool. And people can find out at anywhere where podcasts are found, as you said. So they should check that out. Yeah. Any other things you wanted to promote, Eric, or is that it?
I mean, if anybody wants to follow me on Twitter, I'm at @ewebster.
Yep.
I don't think I've ever done that on this show before, so there's my Twitter handle.
Have you ever tweeted?
I've tweeted, yes.
He tweets. And he sometimes retweets the Dark Discussions episodes. Yep. And the scans of the episodes and various other things.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see. And Mike, you mentioned unnatural-selections.com. People can read that. Mike, but what else? Near the middle of March, me, you, and Eric are going to be doing another podcast?
Yes, that would be Bullets, Brothels, and Bots, which is our Westworld podcast, and that will probably put the other podcast, Cinema a la Carte, on hiatus, which seems to be on hiatus anyway.
That means we got to record one of those this month.
Right.
Yes, yeah, so we'll coordinate to do it maybe near the end of the March, I mean, end of February.
Right, yes, we're halfway through the month.
Yes. Yep. So people should check that out. that will be a weekly episode on each episode of.
Oh, Jesus.
Westworld, I guess.
I hope it's worth it.
Yeah. I mean, last season was decent, but it definitely wasn't as good as the first season. So
yeah.
We got to hope that it's exciting. Yeah. If it's an exciting season.
I am convinced it's going to be completely different than either of the first two seasons. So we'll see.
Oh, yeah. Well, it has Jesse Pinkman in it, so there's that.
Vincent Cassell's in it, too. He's joining the cast.
Yep.
But yeah, maybe it'll be kind of cool if it's completely different than Westworld, because again, Westworld was just a fictional land, and now it could be anywhere. Yeah, so it'll be curious.
I predict it'll have hints of future world, in that part of it is going to be robots infiltrating.
Interesting. Okay, that'll be kind of cool.
That's my bold prediction.
Yeah, I'm with it. I'm with it. All right, and I think that's pretty much it. So, Abe, you are going to be doing another book episode coming up in a couple of weeks. What's that one going to be about?
Oh yes, we are going to be covering "Whispers in the Dark," a H.P. Lovecraft story. Stay tuned for that when we get around to recording it. We had to put it on hold for a little bit only because of Valentine's Day tomorrow and stuff. So once we get that all settled, stay tuned for when that pops up on the listing.
Yep. It's always good to talk a little Lovecraft. You don't see much about it except for in books and stuff. So podcasting it will be kind of fun. All right, so I guess that's pretty much it for this, so we can give our final thoughts on the film. So, Eric, why don't we start with you?
I found the film uninteresting. I do not recommend it.
All right, very good. Mike?
I would give it a mild recommend. I would probably wait for this to hit a free streaming service. Because unlike Phil, I do believe you can go wrong with a 99-cent rental. From what I understand, there's no price that is appropriate to pay for a cent. whatever.
Ascent. That's how it should be pronounced. Ascent.
I don't think it's a bad film. I just think it is an underwhelming film. If you are fans of the actors, it's probably worth watching. If you're fans of the director's other work, and I don't know anyone who is, but if you are, or you're their relatives, then maybe you want to spring for the 99-cent rental.
All right, very well. For me, I'm around where Mike is. It still could be a top 20, lower 20, no, lower teens, for a film if I had to rate it, in a horror group. But it was nothing that overwhelmed me or anything. Kind of what Abe said earlier, where, you'll forget about it in a few months from now, maybe in a few weeks. I will say, if you're a fan of any of the actors, it's probably worth checking out. Especially Jeffrey Donovan. I felt he was incredible in this film. But then again, every time I see him on screen and he plays small roles, he's always like a screen stealer, in my opinion. So having such a large role here was kind of a delight to see him. One of our underused actors, I feel. But all in all, just a so-so film. And it is what it is. Abe.
This movie, as I said, it's not bad. It's just almost like a plain piece of white bread. It's inoffensive. It's rather it has some flavor, but nothing really standouts. Won't make you sick. It won't really thrill you. It's just kind of there. It has some good, there's some ideas, but nothing that's really just played with or anything like that. It makes it, unique. The performances are good. They work well with what they have in the script, but I think the script could have been written much better
or it could be just a matter of the direction what the filmmakers did. And in the end, what we got was just a film that, you know, sort of exists. And maybe some people will really get into it if they haven't seen a bunch of home invasion movies, even those that had the reverse sort of scenario. But on the other hand, you might just, you know, as I said, it might be just, they might have the same feelings we had. But in the end, you know, it's all 99 cents on Amazon. You can give it a watch if you're really interested. But again, there's a lot more out there in terms of horror genre and horror comedy that are a lot stronger and will be more entertaining.
All right, very well. So this was Villains, 2019 film, directed by Dan Burke and Robert Olson, also co-written by Dan Burke and Robert Olson, starring Bill Skarsgård, Micah Monroe, Jeffrey Donovan, and Kyra Sedgwick, and 84% on Rotten Tomatoes, and reviewed by basically mainstream critics as well as bloggers. So I guess with all that stated, Eric, why don't you lead us out?
All righty. Thank you for tuning in and listening to us talk about Villains. Come back next week. We'll have another topic.